You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Laps Factor Podcast.
What is up, College Lacrosse fans? You're watching episode 270 or so of the Lax Factor Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Hoost, and today, first day back after a hiatus that involved a lot of golf, a lot of Fortnite with the kids and crap like that. But the season is upon us. I cannot put this off anymore, and we need to dive into this crap. We're going to start out today with a bunch of news. Syracuse scrimmaged Michigan yesterday. Hopkins scrimmaged UMBC Friday. Maryland's, you know, putting the number one on a defender for the second season in a row, and I fully agree with that decision. We'll talk about the media poll a little bit and how my media poll, my submission differed a little bit from the final poll. Inside Lacrosse did a pretty decent write-up, you know, position by position. So I just wanted to talk about those rankings and where I agreed and disagreed. And just generally, we're just going to ramble for a little bit, try to get back into the groove, because next weekend, a week from today, I'm talking about games with highlights and all of that crap. So as always, be sure to like, subscribe. You know, you can watch us on Spotify. You can watch the video podcast and listen. YouTube has the video podcast, of course, and then you can get the podcast audio wise anywhere where you can find your podcast. If there's a player or a platform that I'm not on that you would like me to put it on, let me know and I shall do that. But I digress. I want to dive into the news here. I want to talk first about the Syracuse and the Michigan scrimmage from yesterday. Now, I'd hoped the news was a little bit better. The reports varied widely. I heard one report, it was as bad as 12-6 in favor of Michigan at one point. The story went, no matter what the report was, because I heard it was 12-6 at one point, but it was 8-6 by halftime. I heard Syracuse may have started subbing out their defense at the half, whereas Michigan may have kept their guys in a little bit longer. This is what you get from the Syracuse fandom side of things. But the idea being 8-6 at the half was what I think to be the most credible report. I heard 8-6 or 9-6 at the half from two different sources here. One of them in the Syracuse fan forum, and then another one via social media private message here. I heard Syracuse had troubles clearing. That was across the board. Everyone that talked about it that had any knowledge of it or so-called knowledge of the outcome said in the first quarter, Syracuse cleared the ball terribly. There was mention that Michigan may have even been trying out a 10-man ride for portions of that first quarter, although I can't confirm that. But I did hear pretty consistently Syracuse struggled to clear the ball. But other than that, both teams looked very good offensively. Both teams looked solid defensively. And Syracuse did well against Wheatfelt and the Michigan faceoff unit to the tune of either splitting or maybe even coming out a little bit better than what Michigan did. So that would be a good sign. But we got to wait till the real games are being played to know either way. But any good news from the faceoff dot for Syracuse is going to be good news for Syracuse fans. So overall, that's really it. There's nothing else to report. There may have been an injury at the defensive midfield position. Didn't say if that was faceoff wise or if that was just straight up short stick D mids. But no report on who that is yet. So we'll see, or how serious it even was. So we'll see how that goes. But hey, reason to be optimistic here for Syracuse fans. We also had Hopkins scrimmaged UMBC on Friday night. This is, I think, their only tune-up before the season starts. They turned a lot of heads last year. You know, I did not expect for Hopkins to do what they did, and they played well offensively with a blue-collar group of guys. And defensively, they were one of the toughest defenses in the nation. Physical, beat you up, could take the ball away. They got streaky goalie play, but good enough for them to have the season they had last year. Now, from what I heard in this scrimmage, specific to the scrimmage, because I'm going to talk about Hopkins offensively a little bit more, Angelis apparently had the Midas touch. If you listen to the IL staff, they were really hyped on Angelis in the scrimmage. They said he started out like 2-2. Every time he touched the ball, good things happened. And with Degnan, Angelis and Melendez all back on attack, mixed with the fact that Inside Lacrosse rated their midfield the number one midfield. I'm not sure I agree with that, but we'll see as we dive into it a little bit more. I don't want to just continue to talk about Hopkins in a positive light nonstop, but legitimately it does appear Hopkins is back, because now that defense, they're not blue collar anymore. They got Smith and Sulik back on close defense to anchor that defense with Chase Erlin, who could maybe bring a little bit more consistency to Cage Although I would posit that even Erlin's a little bit of a streaky goalie. But when he's hot, he put up back-to-back 21 save performances, I believe, for Cornell last year. So that's just huge for Hopkins to get that back, to have the bulk of everybody back. I believe they lose Mazone, who was a physical leader down there, but they bring back, like I said, Smith and Sulik, and now they have Erlin and Cage, who's a fifth or sixth year college student at this point. The dude's like 25 years old starting in Cage for Hopkins, so that's going to be huge for them. I fully expect Hopkins is going to be able to finish top three of the Big Ten, and either or maybe both, they could win the tournament and even the regular season crown. So watch Hopkins. They're going to be very, very good in this upcoming season. One thing didn't surprise me. I hadn't thought about who's Maryland going to give the number one to, and it turns out for the second season in a row, they're going to give the number one to a defender. They're going to hand their famous number one to veteran defenseman and taker of his peers candy, Ajax Zapatello. Zapatello wore number 36, I believe, a season ago. And this year, he'll don the number one. One of the best takeaway defenders in the country. I think potentially the best overall defender in the country, because he can do anything you ask of him. But anytime you've got a guy that can play a number one, or maybe get lucky and get to guard a number two while you try to put someone else on the number one, while he can kind of roam around and anchor a little bit more. But he can also take the ball away. Just huge. The bad news for Maryland, they're used to having multiple top-notch defenders that are at or above Zapatello's skill level, while also having an offensive player that's usually one of the best players on the field. They didn't have that offensive threat last year, hence Makar getting the number one, and the same this year. Zapatello is their obvious best player, and they're giving him the number one. Another huge thing for Maryland that I think isn't being talked about enough, or maybe it is, and I'm just that douchebag now that says, oh man, you know, they're fronting on somebody, is McNaney is back in Cage. Corning kid, Section 4 kid, back in Cage for Maryland after winning a national title the season before that. So McNaney is he's going to bring some stability. Not that Maryland was bad in goal last year. They figured it out by the end, and they had a really good, I believe their defense was top 10 in terms of adjusted defensive efficiency. So Maryland's going to be good to go, but having McNaney in Cage, they've got to be excited about that and expect Zapatello to absolutely wreck people here. Now, this is where things start to get a little bit gross, and I'm going to apologize to my Syracuse my fans that happen to also be Syracuse fans, is once again, I've got to talk about Hopkins, because here was a gross thing about Hopkins in terms of this whole, is Hopkins back for a second season in a row debate here. And this is not a typo. What I'm about to say, I believe it is accurate, because I did see that Inside Lacrosse was talking about it as well. Hopkins returns their top 11 scorers from a season ago. So as you're looking at this, the chance that the guy here, if he's one of the top 11 on this list, is back for the 2024 season, I believe, is a lock here. They haven't had this much firepower in a really long time. And granted, as we start getting down to the lower levels of this, these aren't guys that have put up a ton of points, but still, these are guys that have all played together multiple seasons in a row now. They've played within this system. And that's nothing but good for Hopkins. Now, Angelis was last year's top dog. He put up 61 points, 17 goals, 44 helpers. He facilitated almost everything that Hopkins did to a degree. Outside of, they had some midfield dodgers, but they really tried to push the ball a lot through X with Angelis. And that was great when he was on point, not so much when he wasn't on point. Hopkins went 8-0 when Angelis scored three or more points. When he was held to 2 points or fewer, Hopkins was 1-3. Now, that's obviously going to happen, because when your best player isn't putting up points, you're not going to do quite as well. That would also imply you're playing against a defense that's good enough to take him out of the mix, which means what else are they taking out of the mix and screwing up? So obviously that makes sense, but still, Angelis, when he played well, three or more points, 8-0. When he didn't, 1-3 if he had two or fewer. Now, lucky for the Jays, though, with all that said, he scored three or more points in 11 of the 17 games that he played in. And from what we're hearing from IL, like I talked about earlier, he's looking really good already, and he's got both of his line mates in Degnan and Melendez back. And you look here, 61 points for him as a facilitator primarily, 17 and 44 was what he put up here with a 32% shooting percentage. That is excellent. Did not turn the ball over all that much, 23 turnovers, considering the amount of touches that he got and the amount of offense that they tried to put through him. And then you look at Russell Melendez, 53 points, 39% shooting. Dude could score highlight reel level goals, you know, hustle Melendez, whatever you want to call him here. Dude got it done. Garrett Degnan, 41-5, goal scoring threat. Dude has a cannon. And all of these guys started pretty much the entire season. Angeles and Melendez each missed a start, but that's it. And then you look at Melendez's on shots on goal percentage, 75.3%. That's pretty ridiculous. Now, we get into the midfield that was ranked number one midfield in the country, and you can kind of see why, because we've got three midfielders here between Collison, Grimes, and Peshko that all put up 35 points, 34 points, and 21 points respectively. All of them goal heavy, but all of them can do either or. Collison's my favorite of the bunch. He started 14 games last season. I believe he was a freshman last year. It was last year his sophomore season. I always forget and get mixed up because some of these guys now with COVID have been here forever. As we get deeper into the season, you're going to hear me say over and over again, holy shit, he's still there. Matt Brandau of Yale. I had no idea that Brandau was going to be back at Yale, which is crazy now because that attack unit at Yale between Brandau, Lyons, and offhand here, I'm forgetting the third. That's going to be a filthy attack unit. I think we're going to talk about them in a little bit here. So you get through to Collison. I think Collison has midfielder of the year level potential. I was high on him a season ago. I think he's going to have a better season this year, especially because, once again, he's playing with all of these guys that he was used to playing with last year. Brendan Grimes, big name, 20 and 14 last year. Peshko, 16 and 5. And then you start getting down deeper. We get into the 7, 8, and 9 leading scorers. We're still looking at 16 points for Dylan Bauer. Ryan Evans put up 12. Casey McDermott put up 12. Brooks English, who some are saying could be one of Hopkins' best offensive players overall, I believe is what IL was saying in that report, unless I'm mixing him up. He had 11 points last year, and if they're saying he's progressed so much that he's now one of their better offensive talents, that's just absolutely huge. So yeah, top 11 scorers from a season ago, all back for Hopkins. Now, this is in addition to Erlen coming in to fortify the cage for Hopkins, to their defense returning the bulk of everyone other than Mazzone. So once, just nothing but optimism here coming out of Blue Jay land in Baltimore. And we'll get to see Syracuse play them here again. Now, another thing I want to talk about, and that is the media poll. And the media poll, pretty, I don't think there's a whole lot of surprises. I think the biggest mover upper in terms of, you know, where they finished the season last year to where they are now was definitely Syracuse. But as I go through the poll here and we look at it, I had Notre Dame, Duke, and Virginia. I had Notre Dame, Duke, Virginia, and Penn State and Hopkins all in this order. I figured we had to Penn State surprised, and I'm not sure what Penn State's going to do this year. But I feel I've always said this, and I said this last year, you got to reward the previous season's success in the preseason poll for sure. That's just the way it works. And I felt like that made sense. I saw even, I think the USA lacrosse poll may have even had Maryland ahead of Hopkins, which I thought was ludicrous, but I felt like this was fair. And this is, though, where I break away from them. Now, as we get into 6 through 10, I had Cornell and Maryland swapped here. I had Cornell at 5, and then I had Maryland at number 7, and then I had Army at 8, so I nailed that one down. This one right here, I actually put Georgetown at 9. I don't know why. It was partly rewarding last year's success. I initially in one of my drafts had them further down, so I pretty much got this one wrong. They give that to Syracuse, which I was glad about. But I had this, my number 9 was Georgetown. My number 10 was Syracuse. Yale ends up picking that spot up here. My number 11 was Princeton. Michigan eats that one. My number 12 was not Georgetown. My number 12 was Michigan. I forgot. I realized for people who are only listening that I lost you there with a couple of the spots. My number 13 in the poll was Denver. My number 13 was Yale. And that was partly because when I did the poll, I had not yet realized that Brandau was back at Yale, which is probably would have changed that for me as well. My 13 was Yale. The number 14 in the poll is Princeton. My 14 was Denver. I nailed the Rutgers. I had them at 15, and the poll did as well. And then as we get down to the bottom here, the poll has Delaware at 16. I had Penn. 17 is North Carolina. I nailed it. The poll has Boston U at 18. I have Delaware at 18. Poll has Penn at 19. I had Boston U. Poll has Richmond at 20. I had Utah. So, I mean, by the time you get down to there, who gives a crap? I tried to kind of do a mix of, hey, Utah made the tournament, so let's put Utah in the poll over Richmond, even though I'm not sure if Utah can repeat that level of success. So the ones I think mainly that I got wrong, it was Michigan here. Yale, I probably should have had up a little higher, but generally I think I did an okay job. And I'm realizing as I'm reading this all off and talking about it that this was a terrible segment, should not have done it, or I should have done it more effectively and had a better plan and cadence for it. So let's ditch the shit out of this here. And this is where I get into, to a degree, flying by the seat of my pants. So we will talk about some units here, and we're going to talk about the attack units for 2024. As per IL and what they think the top attack units are. Now, they're giving honorable mention to Syracuse. Syracuse, as everybody knows, has Spallina and Hiltz back, and Christian Moulet, the transfer from Lehigh, and then Trey Deer figure to factor in. I believe from what I've heard, it's going to be Spallina, Hiltz, and Moulet starting. I think Moulet just fills that spot better because the only problem I've heard with Deer is if you throw Deer into that mix, now you've got too many lefties. You don't have a guy that has proven that he can be just a legitimate and absolute animal on the dodge. And I think Moulet and Spallina are both good dodging attackmen. Not that Hiltz can't dodge, but Hiltz is kind of a facilitator slash off-ball scorer to a degree, although he did a little bit more and mixed it up a little bit more last year in terms of carrying the ball, partly by necessity. Syracuse lacked a really, really solid elite dodger on attack last year. So I think Moulet is better than Kirst in that spot. I think he fits the will gel with that Syracuse attack much better. And then you can't count Deer out. Deer, scoring threat, probably will be a surprising feeder as well. Hiltz, I always looked at as a guy that was going to score goals off ball, snipe lefty from wings and crap like that, but he's turned into a complete player, and Deer should be that as well as a freshman. He's an All-American out of high school here, out of, I believe, IMG. Is that where Deer played? Syracuse gets honorable mention. Now, Michigan, I was surprised to see them get mentioned, except they bring in Lehigh grad transfer Justin Tiernan to replace losing Big Cat that we'll talk about here in a little bit later. So they got Bohm back, Cohen back, and this grad transfer. And apparently that's supposed to be a very good attack unit. Now, Bohm was 45 and 28, or BAME. I forget how to pronounce it. I think it's actually BAME. 45 and 28 last season. Very good attackman overall. Cohen, 27 and 30 last season. Tiernan, 23 points a season ago, I believe. So he's going to probably fill out that third attack spot. Apparently, they looked very good against a sketchy Syracuse defense here come Saturday. So that's all good things for Michigan. Now, Maryland, they get Maliver back from an injury last season. Maliver was supposed to be one of their better attackmen last year. He gets injured preseason, doesn't play at all. But they get Braden Irksa, Daniel Kelly, Danny Maltz. I don't know who's the crazy ball carrier in this mix. It seems to me a lot of goal-scoring guys. I know Kelly can mix it up a little bit. In last year's Maryland offense, they were still 11th in the country in terms of overall efficiency, which lets you know the system works. Now it's just a matter of, do they have the guys that can get Maryland back to the top of the Big Ten? I'm not sure. Because Hopkins, they bring all three of their attackmen back, as we talked about, so I'm not going to wax nostalgic about them again. But yeah, Hopkins being mentioned here in terms of one of the best attack units because they bring a very productive unit back, you know, full team. Okay, we move on, and now we get – this is where I'm not sure completely. Cornell at number 5, obviously C.J. Kirst, Long, and Firth, very formidable. Firth, I believe, is the kid of the group, and cursed, I mean, 65-19 per my Lax Factor attack rankings, which I'll put out here come next week and the week after. We'll start talking about them more. Cursed is actually the top ranked attackman per my computer generated rankings. It's really not computer generated rankings, and it's more a formula to rank players, and Cursed is the best, partly because he turns the ball over very little, scores a boatload of points overall, so his points per game is high, but more importantly, between not turning the ball over, he takes the ball away. The gap between his shooting percentage and his on-goal percentage is one of the smaller amongst the top attackmen, so that kind of brought him up to the top. So Cursed and that Cornell unit will be formidable. This unit here, Leo Johnson, Chris Lines, I miss Johnson, and Matt Brandau, that's a ridiculous attack unit. Brandau's like a 30-year-old man at this point. He's been at Yale for 17 years officially, so that's nuts to have all three of those guys back. Brandau was 37 and 33 a season ago, which I felt like was a step back for him because I figured Brandau was going to put up 90-plus. I had him picked as maybe my Tuartan favorite, or one of my Tuartan favorites last year. I thought he was going to have that kind of season, being a, you know, 29-year-old attackman. He didn't, because partly, you know, you got Leo Johnson and Lyons. Johnson puts up 40 and 22. Lyons, 62 and 12. Both huge leaps in their game. Brandau takes a little bit of a step back, but very, very, very sick, disgusting, filthy attack unit here that Yale's going to put on the field. Virginia, Connor Schellenberger, Peyton Cormier, Jack Boyden, McCabe Millen. Now, I believe Millen, in one of their scrimmages, I read somewhere that it looked like Millen did play the entire game at attack. So I believe that the unit may end up being Schellenberger, Cormier, and Millen primarily. But Boyden will get worked in either at midfield or, you know, as a fourth attackman rotating in through them. I've talked about them enough on the pod. You know, Schellenberger, one of the best in the country. Cormier, the best finisher in the country. And Millen transferring from North Carolina up to... Or wait, did Millen transfer from North Carolina up to Virginia? Who knows, but Millen is going to tear it up here. Cormier was 52 and 12 last year. Schellenberger, 84 points, 30 and 54, 3.38 assists per game, led the country. So, you know what it is here. Virginia is going to be very good on attack yet again, especially with Schellenberger at X or up on the right wing opposite of Cormier. Going to be dirty. Now, number two, I don't agree with. People are going to chirp the shit out of me. I feel like Notre Dame, you probably could have bumped Notre Dame down to five in terms of the attack. The grit, and oh my gosh, I can just picture people coming after me for this after saying all that out loud. I almost feel bad myself because don't get me wrong, they're one of my favorite attack units in the country, one of the most fun attack units to watch in the country. But to have them at number two, I felt like wasn't, you know, just from a statistical standpoint, in terms of my Lax Factor attack rankings, Kavanaugh, because of the wide gulf in terms of his shooting percentage and his on goal percentage, mixed with a lower, you know, points per game than what a lot of these guys have. I like it. I like Jake Taylor. It'll be interesting to see what Jake Taylor can do in a full season, because I don't think he's played a full season opposite of Kavanaugh, and then now Chris Kavanaugh with him. So while I love the Kavanaugh brothers, they're the two toughest attackmen in the country. Taylor's an absolute animal, highlight goal-scoring freak. Ricky Ardelli is also very good. I'm just not sure these guys deserve to be the number two unit in that way, because I feel like if you were to pick units to build your team around, I feel like you're taking Schellenberger and Cormier over those guys. I feel like just because CJ Kirst overall, I think, is the second best attackman in the country, maybe the third, you know, I feel like you'd end up taking maybe even Cornell. And then look at this unit in terms of quality all the way through, point production all the way through, efficiency all the way through, Yale's unit's better. So that was my only disagreement. I didn't mind their order, other than I felt like I would have bumped Notre Dame down the list. And the no-brainer, absolute no-brainer whatsoever, is Duke at number one. O'Neal, the best in the game. Dyson Williams, in terms of off-ball finishing, one of the top three guys in the country. Not an outside shooter. Cormier is unique, not unique in terms of off-ball, but Cormier is good and close off-ball and will snipe you from all over the field out top on the left wing there. Williams, not that crazy outside shooter. He's a true, what you would kind of consider a crease and around the crease attackman. McAdory finishes out that starting crew, and then the transfer of Josh Zuada. Now, I don't think we're going to see Zuada play attack. I think we'll see the trend continue where a guy like Zuada may end up playing midfield, but because Andrew McAdory was a midfielder in high school, I believe, played both attack and midfield, you may end up seeing McAdory anchor that first midfield unit and then Zuada play attack. Zuada, just a huge transfer, the kid from Michigan here. So McAdory, 36 and 25 on attack last year. Williams, 60 and 5. O'Neill, 55 and 42. Best player on the list for sure. But Zawada's numbers, I don't see Zawada's numbers in here. Yeah, doesn't show Zawada's. But make no mistake, he's going to fit in perfectly at Duke. Heady kid, can do everything, can shoot from outside a little bit. He doesn't have the biggest snipe, but he has range to him, and he can probably just about fill every role being the veteran that he is. So 100% I'm on board with that. Like I said, Notre Dame, I just don't think they deserve to be quite that high, but they're definitely, I think, one of the top five units overall, partly just because of their toughness, team leadership. Now they've won a national title for the Irish, so chirp me. Chirp me. I deserve it. I accept it. It's just the one place I disagreed with them. Now we get into midfield rankings. And once again, we get into who they mention as honorable mention here. Yale with Thomas Bragg, who's got just an absolute cannon. And then the rest of these guys, you know, not huge names or whatnot, but they provide depth. They're generally interchangeable, and all of them can put some points up. Cornell, Aiden Blake, Hugh Kelleher, Spencer Wertheim. I don't think they're going to have depth at midfield, and I'm surprised they get mentioned, but you got to throw them in here. Georgetown gets Alexander Vardaro from Princeton. They got Graham Bundy, Dylan Hess. So all those guys are very good lacrosse players. TJ Haley, on attack is going to be good, but in terms of midfield units, Georgetown, they deserve to mention here. Bryant, they mentioned. Princeton lost all their midfielders to other people, so they still have some depth apparently. But let's dive into the real numbers here. Number five by IL is Maryland's unit of Jack Corris, Zach Whittier, Eric Spanos, Jack Brennan, Owen Murphy, Elijah Stobo. However the hell you pronounce that onto. I don't know much about these guys, honestly. I know Maryland surprised offensively, considering how far I thought that, compared to where I thought they were going to end up offensively, to how they finished. And that obviously has to do with all the team depth. We know that Maryland has no chumps on this team, period. But that one I'm not sure about. I know Chorus here, it says 21 goals, 8 helpers. Brennan, 7 and 11. So not a whole lot of absolute proven talent, but absolute solid dogs that can play and provide depth and will get the job done and will play within that system. Now, the one I'm excited about, obviously, number four here, Syracuse, and I'm not sure how they're going to break this up because per the scrimmage, they didn't really say, but what they're showing here, and I'm sure there's, you know, some logic plugged in here, maybe even from Gate personally, the midfield line, Finn Thompson, Jake Stevens, Michael Leo. Leo broke out. Both Thompson and Leo were freshmen last year. Leo, I believe, anchored the second line, but was one of the best Dodgers on the team for Syracuse last year. Finn Thompson played opposite Alex Simmons, a Canadian, and they played an excellent two-man game on that first midfield line. So it made sense to me that they would have Stevens and Thompson on that first midfield line again, because both Canadians can kind of play opposite of each other in that two-man game, and you can have Leo be the initial Dodger and kind of the main Dodger of the offense from out top. And then you got Luke Roja, who played well. Sam English, transfer from Princeton, a very good player, has been injured, but he's should be back and looking good. And then Jackson Birtwistle, who produced a lot of points for Cuse. And then they have guys even below that that'll probably work into the mix here. But Leo, 18 and 8 last year. Thompson, 19 and 14. A very good feeder, especially out of that two-man game as a midfielder. So all sorts of depth when you add Stevens and English. Stevens can go both ways, so expect him to even get some points maybe in transition from time to time. So Syracuse there with the number four. Army, we've got Evan Plunkett, Jacob Morin, Bailey O'Connor. Morin had a big season last year, and then some depth to go through. Once again, I don't know enough about all these guys to go crazy outside of Plunkett was 21-25. He's a special player. Like I said, Jacob Morin is a veteran. He was 36-6 last year. So two very good midfielders to anchor that. Morin took freaking 116 shots on the season, burying 31 of them. Gunnar Fellows was 23-6 last year as an attackman, but it looks like he might run a little bit of midfield. So all things to think about. Notre Dame, and I think that just because of Jacob Eric Dobson alone, you could put Notre Dame up here. Dobson's one of my favorite midfielders in the country, but what Notre Dame has here is a good mix of tough midfielders. Dobson, the big cat, but Jalen Seymour, who looks like he'll get line two time. He was 5-1 last year. Dobson as their top dog last year at the midfield, 34-11. And it seems like Notre Dame always has that big monster, the big, tough midfielder that can light it up like an animal from out top. You know, so Dobson's got 100-plus mile-an-hour speed on a shot, can get up and down, can dodge a little bit here and there. But off ball, just as a sniper, you find him out top with his hands free. He's going to murder people, but he's also going to beat you on the dodge just because he's a big beast. Gray, 16-3. Those are the known commodities per what they said. And once again, I feel like national champion winning. I don't know that Notre Dame, that their midfield has the depth. Let's say that even a Syracuse midfield does in terms of point production, but the fact that they're playing well within a system and they are the returning national champs gets them up here. That's the only one. I can't say I disagree, though, because of Eric Dobson alone. He's that good. I think that he probably my top pick by the time all is said and done for a shot at, you know, gaining midfielder of the year, so on and so forth. And then we already talked about it, Hopkins here. Matt Collison, I think, is one of the other top five midfielders on this list here. Brooks English, Peshko, all coming back from a year ago. Brennan Grimes, all of these guys are really good. I think in terms of if you look at top to bottom, they probably do deserve to be the number one ranked midfield unit. I think that the sleeper here, and I say this and everyone's going to roll their eyes, I think the sleeper here is Syracuse, only because these young guys played incredible last year with a rough go. You know, they were all young trying to figure it out. They didn't have the best attack unit overall, simply because they were still trying to figure out where everybody fit. And the midfielders really, I think, carried this team last season to that 8-7 record or whatever they finished. So these are my sleepers. And they're only my sleepers because of Jake Stevens being added to the mix and because of Sam English being added to the mix. Thompson, Leo, Roja, Birtwistle, all very good players, and I think would have maybe warranted the fifth spot even without bringing in Stevens and English. And you bring those two in, and I agree with them putting them at four, but I think by the time all is said and done in terms of points production, that you could see this unit be one of the best, maybe top three in the country. Boom. Defensively, I didn't really like any of these rankings. Obviously, they Inside Lacrosse has Navy and Army kind of honorable mentioned here. They mentioned Cornell, who lost the best defender in the country, the number one pick in the PLL draft. They lose their goalie. So I don't know. I don't know that Cornell has ever had that much depth at defense that they could lose their three-year starter in Cage and the nation's best defender and then still be right on the outside of a top five defense. But that's what IL had here. Now, number five, Virginia, I feel like because of Kastner and Kaloji, Cole Kastner, Griffin Kaloji, transfer from Richmond, played for Virginia last year, did very well. Kastner now steps into that top role on the defense as Sostad leaves. You got Matt Nunes, who's a streaky goalie, but he's a goalie that's got experience like none other and has played in every big game possible. I really like the Virginia defense, and I think that them at number five didn't necessarily make sense to me. I think partly they end up giving up a lot of points because of the way they play defense. But I think if you pop Kastner and Kaloji on any team in the country, they're potentially that team's best defender and will play well in any system. So anyway, Virginia sitting here at number five. Maryland, just because of Zapatello alone, I felt like Maryland should probably be a little bit higher. But the problem being that Zapatello is the guy. They no longer have two top All-American talents here. They've now got Zapatello, and then three guys. I like Berlais, Schaller, and Alvidi. I don't know a lot about, but I do like Colin Berlais and Zapatello, two of the top defenders. Or Zapatello, definitely, I think, the best defender in the country, in my opinion, right now, in terms of all-around ability to cover a man and take that guy's candy away from him. And then you bring back Logan McNaney, All-American goalkeeper, injured a year ago, won a national title. Bringing him back, I think, is huge. So I guess that's maybe not too bad of a placement here, especially with McNaney coming back from injury. Hopkins, Scott Smith, we already talked about it. Smith, Sulik, and Stobner look to anchor the defense. Chase Erland coming in from Cornell, very good goaltender, capable of getting hot and putting up 20-plus saves. Did it last year twice at least. So that's a very good unit. North Carolina. I actually know nothing about this North Carolina crew, like, other than Krieg has been their starter for, you know, what, the last three seasons or whatnot. Andrew Geppert. What is it? Geppert, a Maryland transfer? Leading advocate Andrew Geppert. I don't know. Geppert, I forget where Geppert's from. Oh, Geppert's a Brown graduate. So, yeah, apparently everyone's thinking real highly about this defense with Krieg and Cage at number two. I sound like a moron here at this point. And then the Notre Dame defense, I probably agree with. Conlin, very good defender, very good all-around defender, does everything well. Bergmaster, once again, a very good defender, but you've got Liam Entman returning in Cage. I will not front on Liam Entman ever again. I thought he was overrated a year ago, and his regular season may have kind of lined up to a degree with what I was talking about, but his performance through the tournament shut me up. He wins a national title as a goalkeeper for Notre Dame, was a big reason they won that national title. And so I will shut up about them. I'm totally cool with Notre Dame in terms of a system being one of the better defensive systems in college across, because every year they're putting up a very good defensive team. They do lose Chris Fake, but I wouldn't worry too much about that because Entman's back. Conlin is very capable. And I believe every player on this list is pretty much worthy of wearing the gold helmets and rocking defense for Notre Dame. So, boom, that is what I think about Notre Dame. Let's get into my quick pick here. I just wanted to throw out some quick crap here. Tuartan favorite. My Tuartan favorite for 2024 before the season gets underway here is O'Neill. I think you'd be crazy not to have him at the top of your list. Especially because he brings all his boys back and some to help him out again here. I think that you got to throw Schellenberger in the mix in there. You could throw who else? I don't even know. I think those are the two favorites, and I think one of those two probably win the Tuartan. I think the problem with guys like Kavanaugh are just going to be point production isn't going to be there. You know, in order to win that it's been proven over and over again, to win the Tuartan, you need to put up a shitload of points and be on a team that is very good. So that's the key here. You either have to lead the country in scoring by quite a bit, or you have to be one of the top five scorers in the country, top 10 scorers in the country, and play on a team. No, top five. Let's go back to top five scorers in the country and play on a team that is, you know, makes it to Final Four weekend. So that ends up being how that works. Now, my schedule here for the week is, I think I'm going to more than likely live stream a show. I'm going to live stream, I think, one of the shows. I may live stream Sunday morning, because the idea being it'll just make it easier to get the show out, and then it just exists in the ether. And then I'll put out a quick preview show every Thursday is what the plan is right now. So as I get into the season and get into the flow and I figure out which day of the week I want to do the weekday show, I'll put that show out and we'll decide. But I'm leaning heavily into maybe live streaming Sunday morning's show, just to make it easier on me, you know, because then I don't have to cut things up after. I can just kind of do the show. It lives out there in the ether afterwards and we're good to go. So that's it. I'm going to shut the hell up here. First day back. I've rambled for 37 minutes so far. I have no idea if this entertained you. Are you not entertained? I don't know. So let me know. Everybody start hitting me with questions. I need questions to answer in segments. So hit me up on social media. Hit me up in the comments here. Ask me whatever. Tell me what you want me to talk about. I will talk about it. Tell me teams you want to see get more coverage. I will try to cover them. Just boss me around for the most part. But like I said, I'm going to shut the hell up here and get out. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Come back Thursday. Thursday, we will do the preview show for the games that are upcoming here on Saturday, and then obviously come back Sunday for the big shebang, the first weekend review show, and that's it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening, and Hoost is out.
The Lax Factor Podcast.